Welcome to the Healing Grove Podcast. I'm Dr. Kristen Ryman, an integrative holistic family physician, author of Life After Lyme, and host in this virtual space of learning, healing, and growing. I believe humans are like trees, and our physical limb is only one of many. Health on all limbs of the tree, emotional, conceptual, social, spiritual, is absolutely required for the whole tree that is you to be vibrantly well. I created the Healing Grove Podcast as a place to showcase some of the world's best integrative and holistic medicine, to expose you to transformative tools and mindset shifts for all limbs of your tree. I hope you enjoy our conversation in the Healing Grove today as much as I enjoyed having it.
Welcome, Beth Shirley, to the Healing Grove Podcast.
Glad to be here.
I'm so delighted that we get to have this conversation. You and I met recently at a functional medicine, or actually no, it was the Forum for Integrative Medicine conference in Austin. And we had such a great talk and actually spoke a few days in a row because I just kept coming back to your booth and picking your brain more and more about the benefits of nitric oxide. So I'm so grateful that you're willing to share that here. Thank you.
I'm so glad to be here.
So everyone, this is Beth Shirley. She has developed an expertise over the last 40 years in stress-induced hormonal imbalances, intestinal dysfunction, autoimmune and chronic inflammatory issues, detoxification issues, nutrigenomics, and supernormal oxidative stress. But her passion is what we're going to talk about today, which is nitric oxide and all of its important benefits in the body. So I'm going to let her tell a bit about her story in a minute, but I'll just give some general background. So since 2009, Beth has spent time working with some of the leading thought leaders in the world of nitric oxide research. And through this, she's developed an in-depth knowledge on the topic and its potential applications in patient care. She's been a pioneer at the cutting edge of the evolution of what's now become known as the integrative pharmacy movement, which sort of brings together traditional pharmacy and its clinical use with nutritional supplementation. She's worked closely with both scientists and cutting-edge companies, working on innovative nutritional solutions, and she herself formulated a project that was awarded the first patent on a supplement to increase sexual desire and satisfaction in both men and women. And that's going to be available shortly, in case you're wondering. She's currently the Director of Education and Research at Approved Medical Solutions. And I'd like, if you would, Beth, tell us a little bit about how you landed on this amazing journey that you're on.
I became a pharmacist because I thought I was going to help people. And after being a pharmacist for 20 years, seeing people come back sicker and sicker on more and more drugs, in 1997, I became a certified clinical nutritionist. So I actually became the pharmacist to go to if you wanted to get off drugs or not go down that road to begin with. So I've been in the alternative, functional, integrative medicine space since 1996.
Wow. Which was kind of when that whole space was getting its birth.
Yeah, it is.
So it you're like one of the founding mothers.
It was pretty exciting. Pretty exciting. Because it was just like opening up people really figuring out biochemistry and how we can support biochemistry instead of using drugs that are anti this, anti that. You know?
Yeah. I'm curious to know who was sort of in the mix with you at that time. I mean, were they sort of similarly disgruntled pharmacists and people, maybe doctors and scientists? Who was there?
No, very few pharmacists. Jeff Bland, I learned a lot from him back in the 90s. Some hormone guys like Dr. Wright. Mm-hmm. Dr. John Lee, the progesterone guy.
Yeah.
In fact, that's kind of what got me into this is like, I was really depressed. And when I was 35 and I went to the doctor and they just had antidepressants for me. And I fought that for a couple of years until I hit 37. And then, you know, the boyfriend was ready to leave me, blah, blah, blah. I mean, life was terrible. So I went on antidepressants. And when I hit 40, I was going, you know, something else is going on here. And I read Dr. Lee's book, What Your Doctor May Not Tell You About Menopause. And it talked all about progesterone. And so I went on some natural progesterone and within 9 months got off the antidepressants. And that's kind of what got like opened up my eyes that there's other ways to do things.
Wow. Isn't that often the case, right? People have their own real experience with the failures of the model that we all grow up in, and then they have to seek out something new.
Yeah. Couple times
Yeah.
it's happened. Yeah.
Well, I want kind of want to dig into that a little bit because I'm having been through my own, leaving my tribe story. I'm always curious about what that was like for you and whether you had mentors in the pharmacy world where you were, you'd grown up.
No, I was the pioneer. But I mean, I knew things were just not right. And so I was like a sponge for information. I went to so many conferences and learned, what to do instead of drugs.
Yeah. So how did you make your way to nitric oxide?
Well, the pharmacy that I was running was really close to a nitric oxide company. They were just getting started. It's called Human now. And they were just developing a lozenge, a nitrite-based lozenge. So I helped with the formulation and I put it in the first pharmacy, which is the pharmacy I worked at. I put it in the first doctor's office. I hooked them up with their first distributor. So that's how I got started in nitric oxide. And that's where I learned where nitric oxide actually touches every single physiological process. And it's the base of all healing. If you don't have good circulation and microcirculation, it doesn't really matter what else you're doing or what else you're taking, because it's not going to get to where it needs to go.
So let's pause there for 1 second and talk about circulation because you and I were chatting beforehand about like the importance of nitric oxide in sort of every aspect of circulation, and I really want to hear you break that down for people. But I want to start by saying, what we learned in medical school about circulation is that there's these sort of several important factors that keep blood flowing and oxygen therefore flowing to its destination, which is the whole point of it, right? Like you want to get nutrients and oxygen downstream to the tissues that need it. And so we had this thing called Virchow's triad, and it was all about like the three things that contribute to blood clot formation. Because a blood clot, right, becomes the perfect obstacle for any kind of flow. And they were endothelial damage, so damage along the lining of the blood vessel, which can create plaque and can create obstacles. It was, and also, I think you're going to tell us more about what endothelial damage does with nitric oxide, I'm sure. Also, stasis or changes in blood flow. So, when you're not moving a lot, when you have compression, when you're sitting on an airplane for long periods of time and blood's not flowing and you're not using your muscles to pump, the venous blood back to the heart, that stasis or those changes in flow can create opportunities for eddies or for small areas of non-flow, which create the setup for clotting. And the third one is hypercoagulable state. So people who have cancers, people who have genetic clotting issues, like I found out I do, also tend to create more clots than others or have trouble breaking them down. So those three things together combined all can create a perfect storm such that people cannot get blood delivered to where it's supposed to go. And then, of course, all hell breaks loose. So break it down for us. How is nitric oxide kind of the key to all those things, like you told me before our call?
Well, for one thing, the cells can't be more than two cells away from a functioning microcapillary. So the microcapillary, that's where all the exchange pl takes place, the oxygen, glucose, nutrients, and just as importantly, the deb cellular debris to be carried away. Nitric oxide is needed to decrease the oxidative stress. The oxidative stress is what dissolves the glycocalyx, which helps protect the inside of the blood vessels. Nitric oxide is what keeps your blood flowing. Nitric oxide is what governs platelet activation and aggregation, aka clotting. So if you're deficient on nitric oxide, these cells aren't going to be fed. The glycocalyx is going to be destroyed. And you're going to clot.
So where does nitric oxide come from?
We make nitric oxide two different ways. One through the arginine, NOS, nitric oxide synthase pathway, and the other through the nitric oxide pathway. So that NOS enzyme that takes arginine to make nitric oxide, this enzyme is very sensitive. It's pH dependent, it's oxygen dependent, but also all of these environmental factors actually contribute to the dysfunction of that enzyme, like EMF. We're swimming in the sea of EMF, pollution, glyphosate, lack of exercise, drugs, antibiotics, the azole antifungals, which are used a lot in the mold patients, SSRI antidepressants, NSAIDs, your ibuprofen, PPIs, proton pump inhibitors. Proton and pump inhibitors, when they were first put on the market, insurance only paid for a 6-week supply. And now people have been taking them for decades and they're over the counter. These interfere with the nitric oxide production through that NOS enzyme. And the big one, stress. Stress, like, uncouples that NOS enzyme. And so when NOS is uncoupled, it doesn't make nitric oxide. It actually makes superoxide and increases oxidative stress.
Okay, hang on. My
Okay.
head just exploded. So what you're saying is that stress is basically a switch that takes us between being able to make the appropriate molecule to bring blood flow, deliver oxygen, take away waste, bring nutrition to our cells, which we
Right.
want. And under stress, the switch goes rink and the pathway shunts to making superoxide, which
Right.
creates free radicals and oxidizes and more damage to our
And
cells.
destroys everything. Yeah.
Okay, so if everyone is ever wondering about how stress impacts your physiology, you just got one of the pieces to the puzzle.
Yeah.
That was very helpful. So it sounds like our body makes this naturally under the right conditions. If we're feeding it appropriately, exercising it well, managing our stress.
Except by the time we're 40, that enzyme is usually only functioning about 50%. And by the time we're 60, it's only functioning about 15%. So that's why it's so critical to support that nitrate to nitrite to nitric oxide pathway. And so we can get that through our nitrate-rich veggies, our arugula, spinach, beets, bok choy, celery. Or we can take it like a nitrate-based supplement because that pathway can take up the slack when that NOS is not functioning so well.
Okay, and that one is inducible by feeding yourself the ingredients to
Right.
run the pathway. It's not going
Right.
to get worse with age or stress.
No.
Okay,
No.
well, that's a relief.
Yeah, the only critical part of it is you've got to have good bacteria in your mouth to reduce that nitrate to nitrite. So if you've got dysbiosis in the gut or the mouth, because it's all connected, or you're using like fluoride toothpaste or whitening toothpaste, things or things that change, your oral microbiome, you might have an issue reducing that nitrate to nitrite, which is the immediate precursor to nitric oxide. However, the beautiful thing about nitrate supplementation is with continued use, you're actually increasing the health and biodiversity of your microbiome everywhere, your gut, your mouth, your skin, your brain, your kidneys.
And is it only the anaerobes in the back of your tongue that are required, or are there further ones down the gut that can also make this conversion for you?
Well, further ones down the gut. However, this is the main, that's the main source. That's why, like mouth infections are connected with cardiovascular disease, is because you're not being able to reduce that nitrate to nitrite.
Interesting. I always thought it was because people had transient bacteremia when they brushed their teeth or flossed, or just because of that open wound in their mouth infection. And so that bacteremia was creating sort of inflammation, oxidative stress downstream that would get systemic and end up in the heart, and just the inflammation too.
Well, actually, nitric oxide is our first defense against pathogens.
Say more about that.
Okay. Nitric oxide is part of our immune response. It's actually our first defense against virus, bacteria, fungi, any of the pathogens. So that's part of the reasons why, in this post-viral world, the people that were nitric oxide deficient to begin with, the people with cardiovascular disease, the people with diabetes, these are the people that got the infection bad. It's because they couldn't mount that first response.
Interesting. So, tell me more about as I'm thinking about how viruses often enter our system. I know that there's something you can do with your nose and breathing to also invoke. And I'm forgetting what is it, humming through your nose that also can induce. Can you tell us about that pathway a little bit?
Well, you've still got to have either functioning NOS pathway or substantial nitrate nitrite stores, because there's still only two ways to make nitric oxide. So, by supporting that nitrate to nitrite to nitric oxide pathway, you're actually helping all of these other modalities work better. Like
So if
all
you,
of the modalities that increase circulation. You still have to have a functioning NOS enzyme or nitrate nitrite stores.
okay. All right. Fair enough. So I'll follow you there. So let's think about this then. So if someone is choosing to invoke more of the nitrate to nitrite to nitric oxide pathway by either eating beets and arugula, celery, bok choy, or taking a supplement, which is the nitrite, correct?
Right.
What if, and they don't have those helpful anaerobes at the back of their tongue? How are they able to even get the benefits of any of those? What do you do to induce those things?
Because with continued supplementation or continued increased nitrate intake, you're actually rebuilding that microbiome to be able to do that.
Gotcha. So
So
there's
just
not like a probiot, there's not like any kind of
it's
other
not. No, because it's
eating.
anaerobes. Okay, they haven't been able to figure out, how to give somebody anaerobes.
And keep them alive. Because for
Right.
people listening, anaerobes are bacteria that require no oxygen to survive. If you put oxygen on them, they die.
They die.
Yeah.
Right.
Fascinating. Okay, so basically you have to feed these little critters for them to kind of repopulate the right places of your throat. And once they do, they're going to chomp down on your arugula or your supplement and turn it into nitric oxide for you.
Well, we consume the nitrate. It gets absorbed, circulates around, gets concentrated in the salivary glands. Salivary glands release the nitrate, and those good anaerobes reduce the nitrate to nitrite. So when you use that saliva test strip, you're testing the nitrite concentration of your saliva. So we swallow the nitrite. And in the acidic environment of the stomach, some of that nitrite gets reduced further to nitric oxide. Here's your protection against E. coli, H. pylori. But most of the nitrite gets absorbed and acts like a nitric oxide donor molecule, and different tissues can reduce it on an as-needed basis. For example, when you're exercising, the myoglobin can take that nitrite and make nitric oxide. When you're exercising, in order to deliver more goodies to your cells and clear away the debris. The electron transport chain, like under hypoxic conditions, can actually reduce nitrite to nitric oxide in order to keep that microcirculation open and deliver that oxygen. So the hemoglobin in your red blood cell has to have nitric oxide attached to it in order to be able to deliver oxygen to the cells. So you can even be supersaturated with oxygen, and if you're nitric oxide deficient, you're not being able to deliver that oxygen to the cells like adequately.
Fascinating. So it really does kind of have its hand in all these different pieces of the pie.
Every single physiological function, like kidney function, you've got to have like good circulation in that kidney for it to function good. Your eyes, your lungs, sexual function.
Yeah, let's talk about sexual function for a second, because I think unless people sort of know what their drugs are doing, they might not realize that things like Viagra and Cialis are using the same mechanism, right? Or a similar mechanism. Can you talk about the differences and similarities?
So these PDE5 inhibitors, phosphodiesterase inhibitors, which Viagra, Cialis are, they allow your nitric oxide to hang around longer. So they have to have adequate nitric oxide in order to be able to function correctly. So that's why those drugs don't work in about 50% of the men, because they don't have enough nitric oxide to begin with.
Okay.
So they don't cause the erection. They allow that erection to hang around longer.
Got it. Interesting. And just to break it down a little bit further, the reason they work in that 50% is because nitric oxide, do you want to finish the sentence?
Because these people have at least enough nitric oxide to allow these drugs to work. However, you know, erectile dysfunction is usually the first sign of cardiovascular disease. It's a nitric oxide deficient state.
Right.
But same with us women too. We need nitric oxide in order to be able to feel down there, to be able to respond. And lubrication is nitric oxide mediated. So as women, if we can't feel, if we can't respond and we're not lubricated, do you think we even think about sex much? Probably not. So we need it just as much as men.
And the reason it's working, just to put a point on it, is because nitric oxide is creating a series of events that relaxes smooth muscle, right, in the blood vessel wall. So this relaxed smooth muscle allows that blood vessel to open up wider, a larger diameter allows more flow, and things get engorged, right? And then things have feeling because they're functioning properly.
Right.
Yeah. So it's a little hard to believe that this is involved in so many things. Is there anything nitric oxide is not doing, Beth?
No. And that's why I haven't gotten bored yet, you know, in 15 years, because it touches every single physiological process. Like every aspect of fertility in male and females is nitric oxide mediated. Every single aspect. I mean, everything.
It's fascinating. And it's only a recent kind of discovery, right? I mean, someone won the Nobel Prize in
1998.
Yeah. So it's not that long that people have been kind of all about this little molecule. So can you have too much nitric oxide? Because I'm sure there are people out there who are ready to like pound a bunch of arugula and reconstitute their microbiome or take these supplements and really get their blood flow on. What are the downsides? What are the risks?
Well, as far as the nitrate goes, it's pretty difficult to get too much because the DASH diet, dietary approaches to stop hypertension, has about 1,200 to 1,500 milligrams of nitrate per day. So in 5 ounces of spinach or 7 ounces of beets, you get about 300 to 400 milligrams of nitrate. And in 2 capsules of the AMS nitric oxide product, you get about 325. So you'd have to be taking 2 capsules 4 or 5 times a day. And people you're not going to do that.
Well, for reference, in case people are wondering, when I was at the conference and coming over to your stand every day and testing my saliva, and it was always low in the morning until I took 2 capsules, in which case it went up a few hours later. It seemed like 2 capsules was kind of my daily dose.
It is, unless you're doing something specific, like if you're trying to not get on blood pressure medications or you want to get off of them. I would probably suggest 2 capsules twice a day. or if somebody is like post-jab and they're having trouble like with the brain fog and stuff, I would probably suggest 2 capsules twice a day. If somebody's under a lot of oxidative stress, you might need 2 capsules twice a day, or 2 capsules in the morning and high nitrate veggies at lunch and dinner. I mean, you can do this through diet, but you just have to be real cognizant of what you're doing.
Yeah. And one of the things I loved about your product when I met you was that it doesn't contain the veggies that are good for you slash also can raise oxalate levels. Right. And I know a lot of people are talking about oxalates these days and having trouble with oxalates in their diet. So I love that you had the kind of non-oxalate formulation, which was the arugula.
Right.
Nitrates.
So, yeah, arugula has the highest concentration of nitrate without oxalates, as most of the other nitrate products actually do have like beetroot in them, which does have some oxalates.
Yeah. Cool. So kids can take this?
They can.
But do they need it? Do they need it with their high levels of NOS pathway going?
Well, it depends. See, like this EMF is such a big decimator of nitric oxide, and we're swimming in the sea of EMF. Like, you know, Wi-Fi's everywhere, phones, computers.
Yeah.
And that destroys our ability to make nitric oxide, that uncouples that NOS enzyme. And then glyphosate, even if you're eating all organic, that glyphosate is, glyphosate residues are everywhere. You know, they made sure of that. And even kids are under tremendous stress these days.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can get some of those strips and check to see if they need it. And if kids can't swallow capsules, you can actually even open up the capsule. Like for kids, usually 1 capsule will do it. Or, you know, just make sure they eat their veggies. Just make sure that they, you know, they've got enough circulating to keep their, you know, keep everything like flowing.
Yeah. And those are just strips people can buy on Amazon, or what would be the best way for someone who wanted to test what their nitric oxide or nitrite levels were?
Well, we'll
be to take.
We'll put, you know, a code for you and how they can order in your show notes.
Oh, cool.
Because they can order it through you.
And is there information on there about what to, you know, what your dose would be if your color turns this color versus that color?
No.
Okay.
No.
So
you just want to hit threshold, or, you know, there's for the strips, there's color, it's color coded on it to tell you whether you're, you know, deficient, you know, or threshold. There's, you know, because you were like almost non-existent.
Yeah, mine was pretty low.
Yeah. Till we did a couple capsules.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, cool. So we'll break that down in the show notes for people so they can have a pathway forward. But cool. I want to talk a little bit more about the EMFs, because as you said that, I was sort of reminded of a conference, a Klinghart conference I went to when Magda Havas spoke. Do you know Magda?
Mm-hmm.
And she showed pictures of, she's a PhD researcher from Canada who looked a lot at EMFs and dirty electricity and kind of identified this pretty apparent link between dirty electricity, meaning spikes of, you know, voltage, I guess, coming off your electric, and people's blood flow. Like, she had some compelling images and videos of what happens under.
Exactly.
Am I making the right connection there to nitric oxide?
Yes, you are. They've known that these EMFs decrease nitric oxide. They've known since the 60s. They've known that that EMF causes cardiovascular disease. EMF causes diabetes. They've known this. But they don't want this information out of there, you know?
And is that just because the cell phone industry,
a lot of money.
Yeah.
Lots of money.
My understanding is we're not allowed to sue the cell phone industry in this country.
Well, just like, you know, the vax industry, we're not allowed to sue them either.
Yeah, it's pretty alarming. Well,
Wow.
I'm grateful to know this stuff. A lot of people are going scratching their head, going, "What does the EMF stand for?" They're Googling it. So it's electromagnetic frequency, and it covers all sorts of wavelengths. But there are some pretty non-biologically friendly wavelengths that are really commonly in use in our world, including microwave frequency, Wi-Fi frequency, 4G, 5G, that are problematic for health. And the most sensitive of my patients can literally feel the difference. I mean, they feel sicker, their brains don't work, they get dizzy when they're around EMFs, and they have to kind of create a bubble. It's pretty real for them. And the rest of us, it's real for us too, but we're not necessarily feeling it.
Right. But by doing nitrate, you're actually helping protect your body from this EMF. You're protecting your body from the oxidative stress that's caused by these electromagnetic forces.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that's one easy low-hanging fruit tool. I want to talk for a minute about the words nitrate and nitrite, because I know a lot of people are trying to avoid nitrates and nitrites in their food or in processed foods.
Right, but that's been disproved over and over. And in fact, where that came from was not real life. It was like in a lab. But when if you can produce nitrosamines from your nitrate or nitrite if you don't have an antioxidant. So even back in the 80s, they included antioxidants with the nitrate nitrite foods. And in the supplement that I formulated, we've got vitamin C. So as long as you've got an anti in foods, you've got antioxidants, okay? So as long as you've got antioxidants included, you're not going to be forming your nitrosamines.
And the nitrosamines are the problem piece. It's not the
Right.
nitrates or the nitrates. It's the
Right.
nitrosamines.
However, like that wasn't in vivo. So it wasn't in a real life body that they found these nitrosamines. And in fact, in these foods that say no nitrite, nitrates added, they've actually used celery seed, which is high nitrate. Okay.
Yeah.
And it actually has more nitrate nitrite in it if they would have just added it. So we get most of our nitrate from vegetables, minuscule amount from those foods. And I'm not saying those foods are necessarily healthy. There's other things in there that might not be so good for us, but don't be worried about the nitrate or nitrite in them because that's a non-issue.
Okay. Good to know, because I definitely have said that in the past, and I will stop saying that now that I know that that's misguided. So thank you for clearing me up on that. Anything that we haven't talked about nitric oxide or microcirculation or healing or creating a safer place for blood flow in the world today that we haven't talked about yet?
Well, blood sugar dysregulation,
Okay.
diabetes, insulin resistance, nitric oxide deficient state. So, when you have these issues, it's the cardiovascular complications that get you. Okay. So, the GLUT4 receptor, this is a receptor on your cell wall, needs nitric oxide in order to translocate and bring glucose into the cell. So when you're nitric oxide deficient, you're not bringing the glucose into the cell. Then you've got hyperglycemia, too much glucose in the blood, which then kind of turns to insulin resistance. And then a lot of times diabetes from there. And too much blood sugar increases oxidative stress. Remember I said oxidative stress uncouples that NOS enzyme. So this puts you on a really bad vicious cycle.
Yeah, I can see that. Although is it always necessary to have a nitric oxide deficient state to develop diabetes, or is there just a point at which sometimes too much influx of glucose and overrunning the system with that is also problematic.
Well, all diabetes or insulin resistance is a nitric oxide deficient state.
Really fascinating. And have they done studies looking at what happens when you reverse the nitric oxide deficiency to see what happens with diabetes? I'd love to hear what happens with that.
Decreases blood glucose, decreases insulin resistance, decreases triglycerides. Okay, decreases like you know, we can actually even put a study in the show notes if you want. That
Yeah.
is, it's my favorite study because it just shows by you supporting that nitrate to nitrite to nitric oxide pathway, you're affecting all of these. You're affecting your blood lipids. You know, you're affecting everything.
Amazing. Yeah, I'd love to see that study and we'll definitely add it to the show notes. Fascinating. So that's so funny. I felt like I had a sense of, what I'd gotten from you at this conference when I picked your brain for 3 days and I feel like my head's exploding over and over again, which is amazing. What else haven't we talked about that's going to make my head explode?
How about mental health?
Yeah, let's do
Dementia.
it.
Okay. When you've got impaired blood flow to the brain, this increases cognitive issues, increases dementia. And in fact, there's been some, I wouldn't say it's studies, but I mean, they've mined data, like even insurance data. And they've correlated like people that are on these PDE5 inhibitors, they're on, you know, your Viagra or your Cialis, actually have decreased dementia. So that means, I mean, that's nitric oxide.
Yeah.
Because remember what I said, these cells can't be more than two cells away from a functioning microcapillary. So if that microcapillary isn't open, then it's not being able to deliver oxygen, glucose, nutrients to the cells, and just as importantly, clear away the debris.
Yeah.
So even though our brain is only like 2% of our body weight, it consumes 20% of our oxygen. So that oxygen is so critical for our brain. And in today's like post-viral, post-jab world, the spike protein is actually decimating our nitric oxide even more.
Tell me about that.
Okay. Well, remember I said the hemoglobin has to have nitric oxide in order to be able to deliver the oxygen. So in hemoglobin, there's iron at the core. And to the iron Fe2 plus is what carries your oxygen. The spike protein oxidizes that Fe2 plus to Fe3 plus, so it can't carry oxygen. So our nitric oxide can help us. Nitric oxide can scavenge that Fe3 plus, which is called cell-free heme, and scavenge it, but then it takes nitric oxide out of circulation from doing all these other good things, from keeping those, you know, the circulation open. So it makes this nitric oxide deficient state even worse.
So in
So
other words, the nitric oxide is pushing, is repairing the blood cell, but in the process of doing that, it sort of gets used up.
yeah, it takes it out of being bioavailable to do all these other good things. So
Gotcha.
that's why you see all these people, you know, like they're complaining of brain fog and they just can't remember things anymore. And even, you know, like anger and depression, you know, because you're not getting circulation to that brain.
Yeah.
And nitric oxide is actually even connected with anxiety and depression. When you're deficient, you've got increased depression, increased anxiety.
So it's correlated, in other words, with increased incidence of depression and anxiety, low nitric oxide?
Well, nitric oxide stimulates BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which has everything to do with how the brain functions, neuroplasticity and neuron health, neurogenesis, you know, making your neurons. So when you're deficient, you don't have enough BDNF, and these nerves are not functioning correctly.
How does BDNF makes me think of exercise, because I know that's another big thing that increases your BDNF.
Well, exercise increases nitric oxide.
Well, that was my question then. Is that connected to the increase in BDNF?
Yeah, exercise, because the lack of exercise depletes your nitric oxide. Increased exercise actually stimulates that NOS enzyme.
Right, right. Or what's left of it if you're over 40.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Is there any way to prevent the loss of the NOS?
Actually, nitrate will increase your production of BH4, tetrahydrobiopterin. So BH4 is what keeps NOS coupled.
And NOS needs to be coupled to make nitric oxide.
Right. So even if anybody has any MTHFR SNPs.
Oh, pick me.
Which about 40% of us do. This is by definition, you're nitric oxide deficient. Because you're not being able to make your BH4. And BH4 keeps it coupled.
Now, BH4 is a supplement. Like you can supplement for BH4 with certain like methylfolates and other things, right?
Well, the methylfolate helps you make it. It helps you make your BH4. However, you still need like, you know, the base. You need the base.
So in other words, it's not going to overcome just supplementing with if you have an MTHFR defect, which is going to decrease your ability to kind of move B vitamins around appropriately and make different things as an end result. It sounds like one of the things you're not going to make enough of is the NOS.
Yeah, especially if you're under oxidative stress.
Okay.
Okay.
So it's a supply and demand thing.
Right.
I see. Interesting. All right. So my last question for you is going to be very ill-informed because I can't actually remember exactly what this book said, but you know what I'm talking about, the Methylene Blue Book.
Okay.
That really trashed nitric oxide. And I was like, no. wait, I'm playing with both of these molecules. How can they not play well together? Talk to me about that.
They play very well together. The nitrite, nitric oxide pathway and methylene blue. And in fact, you know, I wrote a paper and I've done talks. So methylene blue only downregulates an upregulated iNOS. So we've got three NOS. We've got nNOS, neuronal NOS, iNOS, inducible NOS, and eNOS, endothelial NOS. So iNOS is the NOS enzyme that gets upregulated with infection, inflammation, mold, like all of these chronic issues, like homocysteine, gluten, like all of these kind of aluminum, all these environmental factors can upregulate iNOS.
Because your body needs to make more nitric oxide to deal with the...
And to fight things.
To fight the things.
However, you know, like I said, it's got to be coupled to be making the nitric oxide. However, when iNOS gets upregulated, it downregulates your endothelial NOS and your neuronal NOS. So in this environmental like milieu that we are in right now, it's not a bad thing to downregulate an upregulated iNOS. And in fact, nitrate can downregulate and upregulated eNOS. So methylene blue does not negatively affect eNOS, the endothelial NOS.
Which has to do with clotting.
Yeah, the blood vessels.
The blood vessels.
And it actually helps upregulate your nNOS, your neuronal NOS, which is in your brain and your spinal cord. Okay. So they actually work very well together.
Okay.
So the methylene blue is an electron donor and acceptor within the mitochondria. And under hypoxic conditions or like acidic pH conditions, your cytochrome C oxidase can actually reduce nitrite to nitric oxide to help keep that microcirculation open, allow oxygen to be delivered.
Really? So your cytochrome, your little proteins embedded in the mitochondrial membrane can actually kind of do the job of NOS.
Yeah, it can not NOS, but it's nitrite reductase.
Oh, right. It's the second pathway, the nitrate, nitric acid. Now, okay.
Cytochrome C oxidase under hypoxic or acidic conditions morphs into a nitrite reductase enzyme because oxygenation of the tissues is critical to cell health.
Yeah. Fascinating. All right. I feel like go ahead.
Methylene blue and supporting the nitrate to nitric oxide pathway actually help recouple that electron transport chain. So instead of having that electron going to oxygen to make superoxide, that electron is going to make your water and your ATP. So both of those work in the mitochondria to help keep those electrons flowing down that chain correctly.
To make us energy at the end of the line.
To make us energy. And because like neurons can't store the energy. They can't store, the oxygen and glucose. They're real sensitive because these neurons hang around longer. They don't get renewed as readily as like red blood cells or anything. So we've got to keep that energy and the oxygen flowing to these neurons. And that has everything to do with our brain health.
Yeah. Let's end on brain health, because I feel like this is something that until previously, well, let me go backwards. And when I was in medical school, I feel like I remember the day that we started using the word early Alzheimer's. Like I remember the day in my third year that someone mentioned that. And I was like, what is that? Wasn't in the textbook. Like there's no early Alzheimer's. And now it's so commonplace.
Well, and it's even worse now.
And people's brain fog or post-COVID brain fog or their Lyme brain, like that's the precursor to Alzheimer's unless you do something to get off that train.
Yeah.
So give me kind of like your best practices for helping people get off that train.
Optimize your nitric oxide. Optimize that circulation and microcirculation, because without that, these cells are going to die. And when you've got dead cells up there, you're not making the connections. Learning and memory, nitric oxide mediated.
Yeah. And this shouldn't be scary for people, right? This is like, this should be hopeful for people.
No. It's, numerous people I know have been like optimized their nitric oxide and got their brain back.
Yeah. Yeah. And my guess is that's not all they did. I mean, usually when people have gotten to the point where they're finding someone like you, or they're finding a practitioner who knows about this stuff, they're throwing the kitchen sink at it, right? They're getting on a clean diet. They're cleaning up the mold in their house. They're, getting better sleep. They're managing their stress. They're exercising, all the things, right? And this is like an important piece.
Well, it's not the only thing you're going to do, but it should be the base of anything you're doing. Because if you don't have good microcirculation, doesn't really matter what else you're doing, because things aren't going to get to where they need to go. So it's the base of all healing.
Well said. Well, this has been amazing. I think we can end there. You've left us with a lot to think about, and you're going to give us a code for people to order some of this nitric oxide support, which is called, what's it called?
It's AMSNO support.
AMSNO support. Awesome. We'll put a link in the show notes and a code people can use for a little discount. And Beth, thank you so much. You are just an encyclopedia of information, and I really, really appreciate the generosity with which you share what you've learned over the years.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Healing Grove podcast. If you liked it, please be sure to like and subscribe. And if you want to deepen your experience further, consider grabbing a copy of the Healing Grove playbook. With journal prompts for this podcast and 41 others, it's the perfect place to record your learnings, keep track of the tools you explore, and reflect on your own experience. Finally, it's important to mention that even though I am a doctor, nothing you hear on this podcast, whether from myself or my guests, constitutes medical advice. Any intervention you try should always be discussed with and supervised by a trusted member of your own healing team. Thanks for listening, and see you next time in the Healing Grove.